acomodados, que ellos son reformistas y creen que se puede reformar este sistema, pero este sistema está acabando con todo mundo. Así que tenemos que ser más militantes y organizarnos, aunque no seamos afiliados de ningún sindicato, pero tenemos que organizarnos y unirnos para acabar con el capitalismo.
El Día del Trabajo fue creado en 1894 en momentos en que el obrero promedio laboraba 12 horas diarias, 7 días a la semana, para poder sostener el costo de la canasta básica. Los niños de 5 y 6 años laboraban en las fábricas, las minas y en el campo, obteniendo un fragmento del salario que pagaban a los adultos. Las condiciones del trabajo eran peligrosas y con poco acceso al aire puro, descansos o sanitarios. Defensores de los derechos de los obreros aseguran que las medidas neoliberales que demócratas y republicanos pretenden imponer ahora son un intento de regresar al pasado. En Los Ángeles, yo soy Fernando Velázquez.
Estás escuchando el Informativo Pacífica.
Los invitamos a visitar nuestro blog en pueblosinfronteras.wordpress.com.
Si deseas comunicarte con nosotros, puedes escribirnos al correo electrónico pueblosinfronteras@gmail.com.
Los invitamos a visitar nuestra página blog en pueblosinfronteras.wordpress.com, donde podrá opinar y encontrar más detalles sobre las noticias de Estados Unidos, América Latina y el mundo desde una perspectiva progresista.
En la Unión Americana, trabajadores de más de una docena de tiendas de la empresa Walmart anunciaron que se sumarán a una huelga el jueves para exigir se les respete el derecho a sindicalizarse y a negociar contratos colectivos. La acción laboral de los obreros y obreras de Walmart coincide con una campaña en marcha para sindicalizar a los empleados de restaurantes de comida rápida. Organizadores de las protestas dicen que una de ellas se realizará en la capital del país, Washington, pues los obreros esperan una decisión del alcalde Vince Gray sobre legislación aprobada por el Consejo Municipal que establecería en $12 la hora el salario mínimo. Este 5 de septiembre entra en vigor un tratado internacional que favorece a trabajadores y trabajadoras de casa. Rocío Franco con los detalles.
El convenio sobre los trabajadores domésticos de la Organización Internacional del Trabajo, la OIT, que amplía los derechos básicos de esas personas en todo el mundo, entrará en vigor este 5 de septiembre. Según la OIT, en la actualidad existen unos 53 millones de esos empleados a nivel global, sin incluir a los niños trabajadores, una cifra que aumenta de forma progresiva tanto en los países ricos como en los pobres. El 83% de ellos son mujeres y se estima que otros 10,5 millones son menores de edad, agregó la OIT. El nuevo tratado, que se convertirá en ley internacional este jueves, requería de la ratificación de al menos 2 estados miembros de la OIT para entrar en vigor, lo cual fue posible debido a la firma de 8 naciones, entre ellas Bolivia, Nicaragua, Paraguay y Uruguay. El organismo de la ONU apuntó que desde la adopción de ese instrumento, varios países han adoptado legislaciones para mejorar las condiciones del sector, incluidos Venezuela, España y Chile. Otros están en proceso de hacerlo, como Costa Rica. Rocío Franco, Nueva York.
En México, grupos zapatistas denuncian un incremento en la migración y las desapariciones de mujeres en una atmósfera de violencia. Desde la radio La Voz de los Campesinos, Diego García reporta.
A 9 meses de gobierno aumentó la migración, la violencia y la pobreza, nos dice el movimiento agrario indígena zapatista MAIS. Daniela Griego dijo que en el primer año de administración de Enrique Peña Nieto se han incrementado las muertes por la inseguridad, ha aumentado la migración y hay más pobres, de acuerdo al Consejo Nacional de Evaluación de la Política de Desarrollo Social, Coneval. Aseguró que en los 9 meses que Enrique Peña Nieto lleva al frente del Poder Ejecutivo, siguen existiendo los mismos pendientes de hace décadas. pues no hay políticas públicas para atender los rezagos. Comentó que en materia de derechos humanos poco se ha avanzado, pues se recrudeció la violencia contra los centroamericanos a su paso por México. Han aumentado las desapariciones de mujeres y también los asesinatos. Y en el tema social hay muchos pendientes. En el campo no hay política agropecuaria. Aunque se habla de firmar un acuerdo en materia campesina, no hay novedades en lo que se plantea en el documento. Lo que se busca de fondo es apoyar no solo el ingreso, sino la siembra de transgénicos de manera comercial. Tampoco hay planteamiento alguno para poder fortalecer los derechos de los pueblos indígenas. Se han fortalecido las políticas comunitarias ante la inseguridad que priva en todo el país. La evaluación es mala, reportó su amigo Diego Saidel García desde Guayacocotla, Veracruz, México, en la radio La Voz de los Campesinos.
En Cuba se hacen preparativos para la celebración del nacimiento del libertador Simón Bolívar. El reporte con Pedro Martínez Pires.
Bolívar, Martí y Guayasamín en el Centro Histórico de La Habana. El próximo viernes, en el aniversario 198 de la histórica Carta de Jamaica, varias instituciones de Ecuador, España y Cuba rendirán homenaje a Simón Bolívar y lo harán mediante una obra del pintor de Iberoamérica Osvaldo Guayasamín. La Fundación Guayasamín, la Embajada de Ecuador en Cuba, la Asociación Española Cultura y Cooperación Internacional, la Oficina del Historiador de la Ciudad y Radio Habana, Cuba, entregarán a la Casa Museo Guayasamín de la capital cubana la primera lienzografía del retrato del libertador extraído por el fotógrafo español José María Mellado del mural que hace 30 años pintó el artista ecuatoriano en el Aeropuerto Internacional de Madrid. Esa imagen de Bolívar ilustrará el calendario de bolsillo de Radio Habana Cuba del próximo año para dar continuidad al de 2013 que rinde homenaje a José Martí en el 160 aniversario del natalicio en La Habana del apóstol de la independencia cubana. Martí y Bolívar están juntos en el hermoso mural que se encuentra en la terminal número 4 del aeropuerto madrileño de Barajas, en el cual figuran también otras grandes personalidades de nuestra América, como el líder indígena ecuatoriano Rumiñahui y el poeta chileno Pablo Neruda. En el acto del próximo viernes en el Centro Histórico de La Habana, proclamado por la UNESCO Patrimonio Cultural de la Humanidad, el joven cantautor cubano Adrián Berazaín estrenará su canción dedicada al 18º Festival Mundial de la Juventud y los Estudiantes, que tendrá lugar en Quito, la capital ecuatoriana, del 7 al 13 de diciembre próximo. En el homenaje del día 6 a Bolívar estará presente un grupo de familiares del pintor de Iberoamérica, encabezados por Berenice Guayasamín, una de las hijas del gran artista ecuatoriano. La Casa Museo Guayasamín de La Habana fue inaugurada hace 20 años, en un acto al que asistieron el líder histórico de la Revolución Cubana, Fidel Castro, el historiador de la ciudad, Eusebio Leal, y el pintor Osvaldo Guayasamín. Desde Radio Habana, Cuba, les habló Pedro Martínez Pires.
El Grupo de Trabajo de la ONU sobre las Personas de Descendencia Africana y el Relator Especial de la ONU sobre Racismo instaron al Departamento de Justicia de Estados Unidos a finalizar la investigación que realiza sobre el caso de la muerte de Trayvon Martin. La información con Emma Reverter.
La investigación que realiza sobre el caso de la muerte de Trayvon Martin. Ese grupo pidió que se haga justicia y se otorguen las indemnizaciones apropiadas. Martin, un estudiante afrodescendiente, tenía 17 años cuando fue muerto en febrero de 2012 por George Zimmerman, un vigilante de barrio. El joven no iba armado cuando recibió el disparo del guardia. Zimmerman alegó haber actuado en legítima defensa y fue absuelto de los cargos que se habían presentado en su contra. Según datos obtenidos por el Departamento de Justicia de Estados Unidos en 2011, el 72% de las víctimas de crímenes de odio indicaron que fueron atacadas por el hecho de ser afrodescendientes. Al menos 136 afroamericanos no armados fueron muertos por policías, guardias de seguridad o vigilantes autoproclamados a lo largo de 2012, según una encuesta realizada por la ONG Movimientos de Base Malcolm X. Emma Reverter, Naciones Unidas, Nueva York.
Hemos llegado al final de otra edición del Informativo Pacífica. A nombre del director del proyecto, Fernando Velázquez, se despide Norma Martínez.
Este y otros programas del Informativo Pacífica pueden ser escuchados o descargados en iPad o en forma tradicional en kpfk.org en los archivos de audio.
This is Freedom. He couldn't make it tonight, but I'd like to ask him his predictions for the coming year, since this is the last show before 2012 occurs. Do you have any outright predictions for this coming year?
Well, first of all, I think the anarchist parade on New Year's will probably be hassled by the police because the police were embarrassed at 75 River when they had to ask permission to leave.
Yeah, and that's the Saturday, New Year's Eve. Where do you think it'll occur? Right on the street or in the side streets or, you know, afterwards? What?
Well, the usual place. I have no idea. I have nothing to do with the steering wheel. I also predict that it will continue to be a problem to get in and out of the Free Radio studio since we have no seat in the anarchist meeting that controls that house. We are at the bottom of the hierarchy there.
Yeah, but that's our Free Radio self. As far as DIY goes, it's do-it-yourself. That's another set of anarchists, and we don't know how they've been operating and if they've planned this very well because it's secretive this year. They say they've been occupying the last night of the year for 10 years or more, or at least five. So what other kind of predictions are going to occur next year? Is it true that you have some astrological notions?
I'm working on that. I'll probably be covering it in future shows. I'm going to be looking at 2012, the biblical prophecies around it, on my next show next week.
Thank you, Freedom. See you then.
Listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.3 FM and freakradio.org. My name is John Malkin, and the name of this program is The Great Leap Forward. You can hear this show every Wednesday night at 7 o'clock right here on Free Radio Santa Cruz. This radio station is commercial-free, collectively run, and has been operating without a license from the U.S. government since 1995. Santa Cruz thrives and survives with the help of your donations. We need to maintain and update equipment regularly, and we very much appreciate donations in any amount. They can be made online with PayPal at freakradio.org. Checks can also be made payable to FRSC and mailed to Post Box 7811, Santa Cruz, California 95061. My very special guest this evening on the telephone is Gangaji. And Gangaji was born in Texas in 1942. She grew up in Mississippi. And she went to the university there and got married and had a daughter and became an acupuncturist. She was a practitioner of Buddhist meditation. And in 1990, a lot of her life then took a new path. She went to India and met Sri H.W.L. Punja, who is often known as Papaji. And at one of her first meetings, she said that she had come there for freedom. And Papaji told her, well, you're in the right place. Now do nothing and be still. Gangaji is now a world-known teacher, and she leads open meetings around the world. She's the author of a number of books, including Hidden Treasure, The Diamond in Your Pocket, and You Are That. She will be in Santa Cruz, actually for the first time in 20 years, holding some open meetings to closely investigate the truth underlying daily life experiences. And the events will happen locally here on September 21st and 22nd. That's Saturday, September 21st at 7 o'clock at Inner Light Center on SoCal Drive. September 22nd, that's the Sunday at 5 o'clock. Tickets are $25 and $20 at the door. The Saturday program includes a concert afterwards with Cortana. Both of the events, again, are at Inner Light Center at 5630 SoCal Drive. And more information about those events is available on the website gangaji.org, GANGAJI.org. And Gangaji, I want to warmly welcome you to Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Oh, thank you, John. I'm really happy to be here.
I would love to hear, firstly, about your experiences leading up to meeting Papaji and then going to India and meeting him. I know that you were involved with Buddhist practice in a Tibetan Buddhist center. You were an acupuncturist. And it's also interesting to me that it's a time in the world now where 50 years ago, people would, in a lot of ways, have to travel quite a distance to go meet teachers in India or Tibet in Asia. And we're in a period now where a lot of those teachers are coming here, which is amazing. But if you would start by talking about how you first decided and went to India and met Papaji, if you would.
Well, I had never intended to go to India. I need to preface it with that. I wasn't interested in a guru. I really loved the Buddhist practice because it, even though they were teachers and lamas and Rinpoches, the practice itself was very democratic, and I loved that. And I didn't like the Indian guru scene so much. But that being said, I reached a certain point where I had beautiful experiences with any number of teachers, and I'm forever grateful for that. But I reached a point in my life where I recognized that there was something deep and essential that was missing from my day-to-day life. I had extraordinary experiences occasionally in meditation and in extraordinary circumstances, and in those moments I would recognize the perfection and luminosity of all of creation. But invariably those experiences would change back into my day-to-day suffering, which in the scope of things was not so bad. I mean, I was living in California, I was doing work I loved, I was in a wonderful relationship, but in the depths, I knew that there was something that I was yearning for that I hadn't found, and I prayed to find a teacher, and I didn't visualize what that teacher would be, but I didn't at all imagine that it would be a guru in India, and yet through a set of really fantastic occurrences, I ended up at Sri Punja's door in 1990, and I recognized this is my teacher, this is the answer to my prayer, and that's similar to falling in love, only this was on such a scale of, in a way, I wasn't even personally involved, it wasn't a personal love, even though it didn't exclude the personal, but it was bigger. And it was as if I had met my missing parent the parent who had a special gift to give me, and I really feel lucky that I did recognize that and recognized him. And so I sat with him for about 6 weeks that first time, and then I paid very close attention to what he had to say. And he was always saying, listen to what I say and then investigate for yourself, because you have to discover it yourself, and then no one can take it from you. No circumstance can take it from you. And so I did that. And it changed my life.
I gather from your writings and from what you're saying now that this direct experience is really central to being present and alive and awake. Tell me more about that. And the method, if you could call it that, of self-inquiry.
Well, you know, like I said, I had had experiences of this extraordinary truth of oneself, but I was still identified with myself as this body. I was Tony then, this Tony body. And so when there were particular feelings that would come up or states of mind, if they weren't expansive and beautiful, I then used that through my thinking mind as proof that I was lacking in something, or proof that I was unworthy or unenlightened. And then it would, the search would start again to find the perfect moment. And when I was with Papaji and really listening to what he had to say, what his invitation was, I heard him say one day very clearly, find out what comes and goes, and then you will find out what is always here. And that is a very simple message, but when I investigated it, I saw every mood I had ever had, every state, whether elevated or degraded, I had ever been in, every evaluation of myself, every identity I had had was subject to coming and going, even if it was just going in at sleep, but usually coming and going multiple times in a day. And from that then, I stopped hoping that those things that come and go would not come and go, that I could keep the bliss states or keep the moments of clarity and keep away the less than bliss states. I recognize them to be, by their nature, comings and goings. And then it was quite natural, actually, to recognize that the awareness of every state or every thought or every circumstance is always present. And it is, in that moment of recognition, it is self-awareness. And there was a way I even burst out laughing, because in that instant, of course it had always been here, but I had never thought to give my full attention to that. For me, until that meeting, it had always been the jumping out place rather than the jumping in. And when I received this, I recognized, I can say now, I recognized what inquiry is. And that's really the message of this lineage from Papaji and from Ramana Maharshi, to really turn the mind's attention back to the subject, which for all of us begins with I. But usually we go outward from that. I am good, I'm enlightened, I'm unenlightened, I'm extraordinary, I'm worthless. If we, rather than going outward into the descriptions or the definitions of this I and simply turn attention toward it, we find that it has no boundaries and has no limits and is freedom itself, conscious freedom. It is not separate from this body, this person who is investigating, and yet is free of the body, free of the thinking mind. So really it is truly non-dual realization, in that the body is not excluded, but the body is not the ruler, and the emotions are not excluded, but there is that which is deeper than any emotion. And in that moment with him, and then in later moments, there was a recognition of myself as the totality. And that didn't mean that my experience or my feeling was always myself as the totality, but the feeling state or the experience and the way that was being described in my thinking mind was secondary to the shift in identity. And it was so simple. And I actually asked him what I could practice, because my orientation was to do something to keep this. And he said, you know, you can only practice it if it's separate from you. And so that, it paradoxically, became or is the practice to discover what is still here, regardless of what else is here, what the ground of being, sky of being. And later I could see this in certain Buddhist teachings like Dzogchen, but it was a revelation to me. And it was extraordinary, and is extraordinary. I mean, that was over 20 years ago, and it's as fresh or fresher in this moment even than it was then, because it's less encumbered. And so, as you can tell, I'm forever grateful to this great force called Papaji that stopped me in my tracks and then invited me to offer this same very simple, very direct inquiry to whoever is interested, not as a religion or a dogma or even as a practice, but as a simple invitation to take a moment and stop your search and discover what is still here and always here. And that's what brings us together.
Thank you. You are talking about a sense of direct liberation. And I think that everyone wants that in different ways, and is everyone's experimenting with different strategies of how to do that. And there's different levels of it seems to me, of internal and collective. There's often, in a lot of traditions, an attitude of wanting to make it a collective liberation once the personal liberation happens. In Buddhism, there's the bodhisattva vow sort of notion. You know, to stay with inquiry just a little longer, you write about and you've been talking about the activity of the mind and being conscious of it and controlling that, choosing, having choice in thinking or not thinking, and also the reality that there are places where the mind cannot go. There are just realms beyond mind. Can you talk a little about that? Because I think a couple of things often happen to people when they start self-inquiry. And there's kind of pop views on some of this, that what you're talking about and what other teachers might be talking about is positive thinking, to be controlling your thinking to think happy thoughts, which this is not, or to not be thinking, for a lot of people, means to be not smart. And to not make, you're going to make bad choices that are going to cause suffering to you. Tell me how stopping thinking and having direct experience is not positive thinking or being stupid?
Yeah, a very good question. Well, positive thinking is wonderful, and it's much more productive for a happy life than negative thinking. But still, it's something that has to be maintained, and quite often, even though it can change the experience of life and would never put it down, quite often it's on top of a sense of me doing this, and so I have to maintain this, I have to do this, or this negative field force will take me over. So this is, I would say, I did positive thinking, and I benefited from positive thinking, but I recognized that there was something untouched, that my positive thinking, even though I felt better, definitely from it, there was something I was missing. And so I, first of all, was simply praying for that. I didn't assume it had anything to do with my positive thinking. I mean, my prayer for a teacher was actually a positive prayer. I was intending and putting out to the universe that I find a teacher. And to me, this was a very positive thought. Then when my teacher said, take this moment and stop thinking, I was a little freaked out at that initially, because I know that it can be quite stupid to not think, that we can be swept away and our thinking minds can be co-opted. In fact, they are all the time by our advertising or government or religion. And yet I could tell that this was a very intelligent mind who was speaking to me, Papaji, and that he had no intent to seize my mind. And there was a moment where I really had to trust. It was a kind of leap, like you say, a great leap forward. It was a great leap inward, where I had to trust that I could discover what is deeper or closer, or the Buddhists would say beyond gate, my thoughts. And in order to directly discover that, not to believe that or to chant that, but to directly discover that, I had to, for a moment at least, be aware of my thoughts and be aware of my capacity to stop in the middle of thought. Not to go numb, but to recognize I'm having a particular thought. I don't have to follow it to its conclusion, which is then the 10,000 thoughts that follow that one. In this very moment, I can simply be still. And what that is really, as opposed to positive thinking or as opposed to being stupid, is the mind opening in full intelligence. So it's not suppressing thought, which can be a kind of stupidity, or denying thought, and it's not formulating thought. It's actually like a closed fist as grasping something, opening. And the open mind in the awake state, I mean, it's quite beautiful in the sleep state. We are nourished by that. But in the awake state, it is in itself liberating. There is an immediate recognition of the vastness of consciousness that doesn't need the thought of, I am this person, I am doing this, I should be doing that, I should not be doing this. Doesn't need the beautiful philosophy that then comes out of the struggle, that doesn't need the definitions that are useful in our day-to-day life, doesn't need thought. It's not the enemy of thought, and is not anti-thought, which would just be another thought form, but doesn't need it for its existence. It is, so that I am prior to thought. I am, therefore I think. And I just had never directly considered this. I had had those moments, but they had all come unbidden. Grace, in a very sweet moment with a loved one, or in nature, or in meditation, there would just be an expansive, open mind. And this was a very conscious, simple, in this moment.
And thank you for all you metaphysicians. I'm going to have to apologize for interrupting, but I am, in fact, starting this show
20 minutes late, and I apologize to all the regular listeners of Bathrob Spears Broadsides. This is the stream of Free Radio Santa Cruz, freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norris, and the name of the show, as I said before, is, there you are, Bathrob Spears Broadsides. I have no excuse for getting here late, but I'm here, and I hope we can continue. If you want to call in on September 5th, 2013, this will be a real station, a live station, at least live to the stream, and you'll be able to get on the stream and talk with me and with those listening on the stream. The show is slated to go for another hour and a half, and I hope we will do better in the next 90 minutes than we did in the last 20, because it's just how it is. So I'm going to begin the show from where actually I left off on Sunday. The show is a smaller version of a Sunday morning show, or it's a larger version of the one that we're doing today. And it concerns itself particularly with civil rights in Santa Cruz, accounts from the street about what's actually going on between police, the poor people, homeless people, travelers, folks outside, as well as issues around criminalization of people for other reasons, like marijuana, like political protesting, things of that sort, local corruption and lack of transparency in government, and other abuses of that kind, which I think are very important and which I do try to update people on and focus on. And again, the call-in number here, if you want to call in, is 831-427-3771, 831-427-3772. Mm-hmm. Yes, that's, again, 831-427-3772. You can also reach me off-air on the Huff Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom line. And I'll have a report from our Wednesday meeting yesterday where we had a somewhat earlier meeting. We kind of jumped back into the morning, and we'll be having our next Huff meeting at 11 o'clock in the morning. We're kind of jumping around so as to confuse people in an attempt, no doubt, to cut back our membership as much as possible. That's a joke. We are actually trying to align our meeting times with that of the Sub Rosa Cafe when the management is actually going to be there, and also with the preferences of members who apparently find it easier to meet some of them in the morning than in the mid-afternoon, possibly because of the conflict with the farmers market, which happens every Wednesday afternoon downtown Santa Cruz, and it's also an opportunity for people who are political activists to distribute literature, table, solicit the community for funds, and so forth. So, let's begin, as I said before, where I left off on Sunday. These are some interviews from last week on the street. I think this interview is from actually a week ago. I think we're August 29th or August 30th. Is it 5th or 3rd, 2nd? I think it's the 30th, perhaps, or the 29th. It was the Thursday right after the show, I believe, that the last show a week ago. And we ran into some folks, or I ran into some folks. I was alone, but a lot of folks were on the streets. And this was right near New Leaf Market, this interview happened.
Ride your report, Yo-Yo.
I just got married last month.
Oh, and who did you get? Who is this? This is the person you were foolish to marry. What's your name?
No, this is the person that was foolish to marry me.
Yes.
Hi, my name's Courtney, but I go by Lee.
And Courtney, what, you believe in this institution of marriage? How could you do this when I am welcome you with open arms?
I don't know. I'm happy.
You've been married before.
Yes, I have, actually, and divorced.
How'd that go?
It went fine for about 2 years, and then adultery started, and...
You were both adults.
Oh, yes.
It wasn't an honest adultery. It was sort of a dishonest, under the covers.
It was under the covers. It was behind the back. There was an agreement that if I was made a fool to, after taking him back, if he did it again, that I would... attempt to take his life.
And did you kill the man?
No, but I did attempt to try.
And so you served some time for attempted murder?
No, actually, it was just third degree assault.
In Santa Cruz? Or?
No, Walla Walla, Washington.
I see, and you came down here.
And there is no Acme Company of Walla Walla, Washington, so Looney Tunes lied to us. You cannot buy rocket-powered skates in Walla Walla, Washington.
That's a very pertinent comment, I want to point out. You obviously married a man as au courant on top of it.
Yes.
So how long have you been in Santa Cruz?
About a week.
And is this your first time, and did you just fall in love with Yo-Yo, or did he fall in love with you?
Actually, no. This is my second time in Santa Cruz. My first time in Santa Cruz is when I met him. I'd been here a week waiting a bus ticket to go home. The morning I got my bus ticket home, he met me and decided to ask me if I'd seen the boardwalk. I said no. He told me, "Chick, you're doing it wrong." And took me out to the boardwalk and took me out to West Cliff and the lighthouse.
They actually let you on the boardwalk. They didn't arrest you with your backpack. How could that happen?
No, but just the other day we actually got a verbal 365-day stay order for digging through the trash cans looking for food after we spent from 5 o'clock until 9 o'clock on Monday riding dollar rides. We spent all our money on the rides at the boardwalk, and we got kicked off for digging through trash cans.
And what was the process in which you got kicked out? A guard came up to you and said, "Thou shalt not rummage"?
Actually, he referred to us as an eyesore. And that
made his eyes sore?
And he said that we weren't welcome there anymore after we had just... I mean, I figured that he would rather us spend our money with the boardwalk, which pays him his check, than with the food vendors that he doesn't see any of the food vendors' money.
I am in a party.
Now, who is this? Is this one of your other wives? What is your name?
They're sister wives.
This is sort of a Mormon thing.
Actually, I was raised Mormon.
I said, so watch your step.
Oh,
here.
My God. Oh, Crow.
And we see the Yo-Yo embracing Crow in his red outfit. He came up secretly disguised, but now he's revealed himself. Crow, any comments for free? No, nothing he wants to say. So we'll let you guys all gather and get together. Yo-Yo, anything and last thing you want to say?
Play me a banjo, your broken banjo. I want to party all night long. Play me a banjo, your broken banjo. I'll bring the whiskey, babes will come.
Thank you very much, Yo-Yo. And we have another man on the guitar. We're listening to the music of
Dog Balls.
And Dog Balls, what have you? That's like a new guitar. Have you got some new songs?
Oh, yeah. You want to hear one?
Oh, yeah. Go ahead. Particularly if it's about the street stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Not enough, man, even with a shotgun in my hand. Fully affected by how I'm a youth. My daddy taught me how to shoot. So catch me if you can, Officer Man, Deputy Dan. But you fail in your pursuit. I do what I gotta do. You almost seen the worst in me. I thought you'd never notice. You almost seen the worst in me. Funny how I get. You almost seen the worst in me. What did you expect?
We're listening again to the music of
The Balls, The Ballsmeister.
The Ballsmeister. Thank you, Ballsmeister. Or Dog Balls. And I'm here at the Sanctuary Camp table. It's out front of New Leaf, and Brett Adams is doing a persistent job hailing the passersby. You can hear him in the distance over the cars. He has Santa Cruz Sanctuary Camp literature on the table, as well as the sanctuary.
The way that some of these people look at you, you could be telling them, help create a situation where the homeless can run rampant and kill people.
But don't worry, these words act like seeds inside of them later.
I hope
and
so. They-
this is a colloquy between activist Brent Adams and another activist, Dan Madison, or Sean Deluge, who's also a free radio broadcaster, whose show follows mine on Sundays at 1 o'clock. Sean is a critic of the idea of a sanctuary camp without very strict controls. I'm kind of a critic, not so much of that, of the idea of, I believe the Sanctuary Camp is a good idea, and I've signed on to it. But as you're going to hear in this tape, Brent feels that my very presence near his table is a way of discouraging people from signing on to the Sanctuary Camp. We got into rather heated discussion about that, and you're going to hear some of it, but mercifully not all of it.
Mystery triangulate. Just me being here with this logo actually creates an effect out, and it ripples out. They'll read something, they'll hear something, and they'll hear something about a syringe, and finally it'll dawn on them, wait, what about that Sanctuary Camp idea? Maybe that, you know.
Help us create a safe place for homeless people in Santa Cruz. This is an unpaid citizen-run event, highly regulated. But the Robert Norris can't be lingering around the table, though. It's the only problem with this. No disrespect.
It's the problem with Norris in a public space. He always lingers.
No. We like you in general public spaces.
But not this public
not
space.
You've signed on your support. We support you also at the Huff and Robert Norris. But I don't want people to think that you have anything to do with
this. I have nothing to do with this ridiculous camp. These homeless people need to be sent abroad. Or sent with broad.
How do I say that nicely without being a total bit?
Well,
get the fuck out of here. You crap with my style,
can,
man.
If you want. It's good. And you may be imagining things. I think most people don't know who I am.
You should see my stinky imagination.
I have on occasion.
Well, we're talking, you're like planting seeds in people, you know? That's kind of sexual there, you know?
Yeah. Why do they call Arab...
No. Homeless people exist, we just want to get a place to eat.
Yeah, we'll listen a little bit more to Brent, and we'll move on.
Safe space for homeless people in Santa Cruz. They do exist. We just need to create a safe space for people to live.
Again,
help us create a safe space for homeless people in Santa Cruz is what Brent here is bringing up. He's getting a few people to take the flyer.
Robert?
Yes.
You're lingering around the table.
True, you've noticed that.
Yes.
But, you know, you really have to deal with these all kinds of people around the table. What can I tell you?
Well, people tell me in large numbers, if Robert Norris is associated with the Sanctuary Camp, we won't support it.
Robert and Norris, so, you can say that he lingers in spite of my best efforts. I mean, you know, I try to get rid of him. I use reason. I give him hugs.
No,
I offer him money.
I put my entire life into this, and we're circumventing what Huff has been doing for years, which is encouraging homeless people to have a protest camp tonight and face down the police. We're trying to do a community effort, highly organized, regulated, and with the allowance of the police department, so we have actually conflicting views on this. If you're going to linger near the table, you're actually just putting your spin on it, and people get the wrong idea.
Okay, just reporting on it.
People get the wrong idea. So
help us create a safe space for homeless people in Santa Cruz.
And Brent continues speaking about the issue.
Hi, it's a citizen organized camp for homeless people. Homeless people do exist, we're just trying to find a place for them to legally be. Help us create a safe space for homeless people in Santa Cruz.
And in the main, people are ignoring, but I
think... Get the fuck out.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to shut down and move someplace else.
Brent, if you try to get away from me and start acting this way, I might even follow you. So don't do that. Just my suggestion is you just do what you're doing. Relax.
No, I don't want you lingering near the table. You're a brand. When you're near the Sanctuary Camp thing, people think it has something to do with you, and they'll never support it.
You don't know what people
think. You've been killing homeless efforts and activism in Santa Cruz.
You don't know what these people are thinking, Brent.
Yeah, I do.
Well, I'm not gonna.
I talk to them.
All right. We'll ask the next person if my being at this table is causing a problem. If he says they are. I'll leave. Otherwise, you do what you're doing, and I'll do what I'm doing, okay?
You kill homeless activism, and you make things bad for homeless people in Santa Cruz. Robert Norris hurts homeless activism for 10, 15 years.
Go ahead.
And this then became a somewhat more heated colloquy, a kind of a foolish one, since both Brent and I are supporters, obviously, not just of... alternate campgrounds for folks and real safe places to sleep, places to go, and fundamental changes in society too. But also, we both oppose police abuse. Brent has done some great work on video on this. I try to do my bit by playing accounts that people have of their experiences with police, which you'll hear more of tonight on the air. And yet what we see here with Brent's perspective on on me, an activist associated with HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, is a, well, it's something I've seen before with other activists who want to gain the sort of support of more conservative groups and more conservative folks in power. And it's not that that isn't ultimately a good thing. Once you have a lot of power on the streets, and once you have folks mobilized, you know, to essentially create conditions for real pressure on the society around us to stop fucking over homeless people and acknowledge their right to have a place to sleep, a place to go, and so forth. That happens after you actually get people who are willing to, I think, resist the existing oppression. And Brent disagrees here, and he's taking a different approach. And that's okay. Everyone can take a different approach. But in so doing, he also tends to attack homeless activists who are engaging in protest activities and attempt to dissuade them from protesting. If they only act nice enough, if they only kind of bow low enough, if they only, if they're only reasonable enough with the city council, things will change. In the meantime, keep a low profile, you know, have a nice clean camp and a little pledge around your neck with a sort of a plastic placard and all will be well. Or at least it'll be better than in the past. And as to be said, Brent has been a part of activism in the past where you have actually, there have been large, massive protest encampments, most notably the one outside Occupy Santa Cruz in 2011 in the fall. And obviously you can hear from the tone of my voice that I think that's a vain hope and kind of a snare and a delusion. But my main purpose in being, when I'm outside in this particular situation, when I ran into him at, I think it was sometime over the weekend, maybe the Monday night, I'm not sure, was to suggest to him that he has a right to believe anything he wants. And I actually was standing, 10 feet from his table watching and recording and making commentary. And I went up there originally and interviewed him and the person he was talking to, and you heard that. But when other people try to force folks out of the public spaces or away from them in the public spaces because they are suggesting that they are a pariah in terms of their work, what they do, who they are, naturally, as an individual who's so labeled, I kind of resist that particular jacket. But also, I think it tends to attempt to... It intimidates people who want to do what others who are HUF members do, which is they do engage in protest activities. And it also discredits the idea that everyone has a right to be in the public spaces and that you can be forced away if somebody starts essentially shouting false statements about you. And that's something that, unfortunately, Brent has done on occasion and was doing on this day. Claiming that HUF hasn't done anything decent around homeless activities and so forth. And I personally have been a misleader and so forth. And that's okay. He's got a right to his point of view. But my response to that is to document what he's doing and, agree with some aspects of what he's doing in terms of supporting homeless rights issues and correct him on other matters, such as maligning various activists like myself and others who support protests. He was trying to drive away people from protests back in April when there was a group of travelers who slept in front of the post office with receipts from the homeless lack of services center that they were on the waiting list there, couldn't get into shelter, and trying to show other homeless people that they had the right to also sleep in public places, given the very fact that there was no shelter, even if the authorities would prefer to drive people into wretched shelter conditions. If there were shelter, that may be a real option, however wretched, but it isn't in Santa Cruz, and particularly now that the Pauley Loft is filled up with people from Page Smith Community Houses. Page Smith Community Houses being apparently remodeled, new trailers are coming in, but even then, it's space for only about 46 people, and it's only after a month or so waiting list time. So the city attorney has created a law that says, if you're on a waiting list, you can sleep outside, and protesters were doing that, and Brent was trying to show that that was, urge them not to do this. It was a bad thing. They were all becoming, you know, they were all simply following some prior evil protest strategy that I had created, which wasn't true. They had decided to do it. I simply encouraged them to get receipts from the City Hall supported homeless lack of services center that would then immunize them from camping tickets, which it did. And they, however, the police harassed them for other things, but actually, I didn't hear that any of those cases actually got to court, although the people, after a brief protest in April, the travelers left town. They were kind of traveling anyway. And a lot of the harassment that folks get comes against people who are traveling, who are poor, who have backpacks, who are sort of rainbow types. And they get the boot because of this new philosophy that this toxic sickness that has taken over the city council, the police department, other authorities, parks and rangers. You see all massive numbers of police agencies downtown for the most trivial of offenses, this task force on public safety. And it's just not good. And I get cranky when I see activists attacking other activists who are engaging in protest activities, or even just documenting, or claiming that their presence is somehow an eyesore or a brand that will deter good citizens from associating. I just think it's the wrong way to go. It's like trying to argue, as I've said, I've repeated this at many a meeting and on the air as well, oh, we're good niggers. We aren't going to cause any trouble. So you can help us. You know, we clean up the area. You know, this sort of thing. This begging for rights, I think, is simply the wrong way to go. But on the other hand, the kind of work that is being done by activists, including Brent and others with the Sanctuary Camp, to try to create such a camp is a great idea, provided it does not attempt to oppress and interfere with the very legitimate protests that continue to go on while I think this, frankly, largely futile effort is carried on. Although, you never can tell. At some point, City Council, if not seeing reason, may at least see that it's cheaper and makes more sense. And, you know, there'll be less shit to clean up all around town, and they can't afford the police costs and charges. They seem to think they can have an endless pocket around it because they keep spending money on it. But let's assume they change their mind. That would be great. And when sanctuary camps get set up, that's fine. Until then, we need to do things that can keep asserting the rights of homeless people, defending the legitimacy and the accurate history of homeless activism. And that is what I was doing. And there's a lot more of this tape, but it's kind of depressing because it's exchanges with some... Well, Brent spends a lot of time denouncing me as a bad activist. He moves to another place. I again encounter him on the street later, and I hang out at a distance from the table. He kind of demands I leave again. I'm not standing next to him. I'm sort of actually way off to the side next to the building. And we have that kind of encounter. And I don't know. It's probably not worth a lot of time talking about. It was emotional for me, and also it was sort of a news account because it's not just that Brent does this. It's been done by other conservative groups who have tried and failed to establish sanctuary campgrounds. Sherry Connable and Margaret Marr and other activists back in 2000 at the Coalition for a Safe Place to Sleep. And they thought if they would simply show that none of these radical activists were involved in any of this, it would pass city council muster. It didn't. It was defeated 5-2. Again, in 1996, Barbara Riverwoman and Sherry Connable tried the same thing to establish a New Brighton Beach campground. And that also was, after a month's trial, it was shot down by the city council. Again, not because of anything activists did or didn't do, but because you have a very conservative staff, you have a hostile police department, and you have interests that in the downtown association that are severely opposed to any kind of recognition of the basic rights of human beings, particularly poor people, because they fear it will reduce the value of driveway customers from out of town. It'll reduce the value of their property if they are property owners. Or there's this most recent paranoia about public safety, that somehow homeless people are a public safety hazard, which is the mantra of Bryant's handpicked commission. Although the stats don't show that there is a more crime in the sense of assaults and murders and serious crimes among poor and homeless people than, let's say, among the community at large. As far as I know, that stat has never been presented, though it is true that homeless people are often more victimized by different kinds of crimes, no question, often official crimes called police policies, but also run-of-the-mill crimes like theft and assault that happen outside because of the vulnerability that people have, their inability to sleep in safe areas, to have somebody watch their stuff during the day because they have to worry about being arrested and having their stuff destroyed or confiscated by authorities. So, you know, definitely good luck to those who are trying to establish a sanctuary campground, but the notion that the rest of us are going to tiptoe around this whole process as though if only we're less honestly critical and angry about how the city is treating homeless people and also keep a distance from this sanitary sanctuary effort that's going to improve the prospects of the effort, I just don't think it's the case. And I get upset when I get personally maligned and lied about because the claim that Huff hasn't done things for homeless activism is just simply wrong. And there's a long history. If people want to go to the HuffSantaCruz.org website, they can see the kinds of stuff that we have done and fought in the past, often on behalf of activists like myself and Brent. And it's too bad. And I thought it had to be said because it just had to be said, by cracky. And now I'm going to take one of those ever-loving musical breaks while I try to get my house in order here, since I did arrive late. And let's here's some here's something that's a little out of date, but it isn't really. It's some free radio logo advertisements, sign-ins, songs, and so forth from about a decade ago, but free radio is still on the air, and it hasn't really changed much. We're still free radio. We're not on the air, actually. We're on the stream. We want to be on the air, and if you have a place where we can, a tree or a high building, high means two stories, where we can set up a transmitter, please contact us at freakradio.org, and we can actually start doing on-air stuff. And not just on the stream stuff. But here's some stuff from yesteryear where we were on the air, and you could hear these kinds of logos, songs, sign-ins, and so forth.
Jeez, Larry, slow down.
It's coming through the air. Oh, oh.
And according to the Refused, which is the name of the group that's singing Frequency, I believe the song is called, they want the airwaves back. And that would be nice, for sure. Liberation Frequency is what that is called. So, let's hear some Moore Street interviews, of a more positive kind, perhaps, rather than activists squabbling with each other. Here's more stuff from the streets. Actually, I think we're talking Red Church, but let's listen in.
Again, these are the Abbott Brothers. It is September 1st, 2013, on Pacific Avenue at 4:30. A lot of tables of jewelry downtown on this sunny, hot, going cooler Sunday. Jewelry has no prices on any of the tables. I've heard of three or four tables.
Yeah, we are.
We have the Hare Krishnaites here off Brahman and stuff.
And the interesting, jewelry and crafts downtown are not considered artwork with a message, unlike, let's say, paintings or literature or books. And the significance of this is that, according to the City of Sparks versus White federal court decision of a few years ago, those written materials and visual and audio materials that have any artistic or message-ish qualities, don't even have to be a clear message, but an expression of artistic expression, a feeling of some kind, are protected under the First Amendment from licensing requirements of the kind that the police will claim is the basis for saying you cannot sell anything on the street that involves, period, unless you have a license. And so you can only give away things and request a donation, though often they'll tell you you can't even do that. That's, quote, panhandling, which in fact it isn't, of course. It's interesting now that one doesn't see, except occasionally, prices on paintings. Occasionally I see that, but it is not a consistent policy, although it was Robin, who is an artist himself, was so advised by City Attorney John Barisoni, he's still our city attorney, or their city attorney, that he could do that and the police would not harass him. And I've recently sent Barisoni another message, another email, requesting that he clarify the policy of the city regarding whether it's going to follow the court decisions and the law and the Constitution about the rights of street vendors to be out there and to put little prices on their artwork or on their books or on their literature or whatever they're vending if they want. It's apparently something the city is not, at least the city attorney, doesn't want to respond to. Last time I sent him an email, it was in February, and his response was, I'm employed by the people of Santa Cruz. I'm employed by the city bureaucracy of Santa Cruz. He didn't use that word. He said the police department and the city council. If they ask me that kind of a question, I'll answer. Otherwise, go fish. We're waiting to see if there's any different answer from Barisoni, but it may be that this will require the kind of legal case that Mike True successfully pursued back in 2002 or 2003 when he won, I think, $15,000 from the city when former police sergeant Lauren Butchie Sticky Fingers Baker custodially arrested him for, he wasn't even selling his DVDs, I should say his CDs of his singing downtown. I think he was offering them for donation, but he might have been selling them. And he was arrested for, I think, whether it was for panhandling or some other pretext that Baker used. And Baker was a bad cop in that regard much of the time, at least during the time of the decade or two when I knew him, when he was downtown on the streets, particularly nasty toward homeless people. Mike True went to court and won. It may require that kind of thing again, although it's, again, not easy finding attorneys to challenge city ordinances, though it can be done. A preacher who was arrested under the unreasonably disturbing noise ordinance successfully sued the city and got them to overturned his conviction and changed the law, not for the better, unfortunately, but did, in fact, there was an attorney who was willing to take that case. I don't know if he had to be paid a lot of money. I never actually found out if he was a... I think he was. Could have been a pro bono. Actually, I think I may have interviewed him on the station, but that was some years ago. This is a fundamentalist preacher in Pacific Avenue that I would not have stopped to listen to, but that I would defend the rights, his right to speak on matters that felt were important to him, even if some regarded it as unreasonably disturbing noise. So, this actually, what you're listening to, is more from the same day when I had this difference of opinion with activist Brent Adams on my right to be on the street 10 feet away from his table, because he felt it was a he felt I was an eyesore and a drawback to what he was doing, and I felt he was kind of crazy on that subject. I didn't really want to cater to that stuff, and so we had a disagreement. You can hear a little more because he set up the table further away, and I was actually, as you hear, interviewing other people, and I ran into his table again.
And across the street, Brent Adams at the Rittenhouse Mausoleum has set up shop again with a sanctuary table. And here on a bench, we have two activists.
Four directors.
But any reports from downtown for you, from you recently, anything you've seen that you want to pass on?
Where's everybody at? Come on, y'all. Get out here.
I mean, you think there's less people on the streets than there used to be?
Yeah. I mean, less people who aren't shopping for, you know, expensive stuff, you know. Lots of them. But, I don't know. Where are all the fun kids and people at, you know? Not as many. They've all driven off. You know? You can't, there's no place to, for people to kick it and sit and relax, you know?
Have you had any problems in the last week or so?
No, no problems. But problems finding, you know, nice place to sit down or something, you know. Yeah, that's about it. They could put some more benches out here or something, you know.
Limited space.
Yeah, more space for people, more shade.
Because the space isn't limited. The places you're allowed to sit are limited. Is a problem.
Yep. We need people getting together, you know, being together more.
And I've talked about the disappearing benches for years. You can notice it most particularly on Walnut Street. The two benches that were at the corner of Pacific Avenue were gone. The benches that were on Cooper Street, across from Next Space and O'Neill's, there's only one left. There used to be four. And I think one or two may have returned on Pacific Avenue, but generally they are pulled out, and not with any kind of public process or hearing or you know, consultation with disabled residents, older people who live in the neighborhood, the community generally, even the downtown association. It's just apparently private kinds of pressure groups can do this, the way that the private pressure of Take Back Santa Cruz and the Clean Team was able to destroy Needle Exchange in Santa Cruz by coming to city council and shaking cans of hypodermic needles at the city council and ranting and raving at them. That this meant that because they found needles, 0.01% of the total number of needles that actually have been picked up by the Needle Exchange services, SOS, in the year before it was essentially sidelined by the community, or I should say by the county health services, which has now taken over Needle Exchange outside the city of Santa Cruz. It was obviously beneficial, and the idea that we're going to slip back into the Middle Ages where we'll use drug war hysteria, and that was done by groups like Take Back Santa Cruz, Santa Cruz Neighbors, and so forth. Although I don't know that Santa Cruz Neighbors was so prominent there. But the city council responds to that kind of stuff. And it did so behind closed doors back in January. And that's has not been reversed. That decision still ongoing. Similarly, the decision to stop providing bikes to children and other low-income people and charities through the bike church has not been rescinded. It is supposedly now they're putting out, they've got some cover-up process they're using year and a half ago, the police stopped it because they don't like the bike church for different reasons that they didn't articulate either to the public or to the bike church. They just unilaterally decided that they were to control this whole policy. And they illegally began giving them to an organization, a for-profit organization, the Bike Dojo, which I understand has stopped, but now it means nobody is getting the bikes. And instead we have this process which is based on the mythology and fiction that, oh, there was a problem at the bike church. And see, that was the reason the police department was able to, had to unilaterally essentially engage in a backdoor process to turn over things to Hillary Bryant's spouse's friend's Bike Dojo, which then couldn't adequately deal with the bikes either and ended up giving them to a Watsonville group that passed them back to the bike church about 9 months ago, some of those bikes, ironically enough. But the whole process is being, the whole real story is being buried, and you can see it buried in the Sentinel with a long, essentially misleading article by J.M. Brown of a couple weeks ago, which doesn't detail the role of the police department in this and the role of the city council in covering this and the role of city staff and Tina Shule, the assistant city manager, in delaying and obstructing any attempt to inquire into this or the attempt to get transparent emails from Mayor Bryant, which took a whole year, as to her involvement in this whole process or lack of involvement, keeping her emails hidden from the community on this issue, even though she's the mayor and previously was the vice mayor. These are facts, and they aren't really pleasant facts, and they aren't nice facts, but they are facts. And if we understand these facts, and we understand who's responsible in these situations, we are more likely to avoid this kind of process in the future if we ever get the power together to challenge it. But some of the power lies in truth. So, as for example, in the ongoing massive propaganda war around Obama's determination to go bomb Syria for chemical weapon use, which is disputed, of course, by different folks, but is also the chemical, to have the maestro of chemical weapons, the United States, and the maestro of phony excuses about weapons of mass destruction, rolling out the same old song. This time he didn't play in too well with the public. Even the Congress is balking some of it. Of the Senate, I guess, the Foreign Relations Committee voted 10-7 to authorize a strike, which, again, supposedly to degrade dictator Hassan's Syrian capability, but is actually essentially an intervention in a civil war on behalf of, and there is, of course, the confusing question, which groups? Anyway, the truth of the situation is important, and it's hard to reach, obviously. But the more we try to disentangle the different stories, the more we try to determine what's going on, the better off we are. And the same is true in local politics, where a lot of actions happen behind closed doors. And it's important, I think, to get beyond that. And, you know, you have to decide what sources you trust or what information you have when you compare different accounts. And it's often a difficult thing to do. I come to the conclusions I do. I present them on the air. I leave them for your inspection and reflection. So, call in number here if you have some reflections, if today is September 5th for you, because that's the day this stream is going out, is 831-427-3772. 831-427-3772. You can call in, and hey, like to hear from you. I put out a call to City Council, perennial City Council candidate, and multiple organization joiner Steve Plaich, and also a Homeless Persons Legal Assistance Project creator, who's can be found every Monday at the Cavalry Episcopal Red Church across from the Farmers Market, 5 to 7. Not just giving out bagels, but he'll be willing to talk to you about legal problems. You can also call him on the phone at 466-6078. He may not do everything you want. He may not actually, in the end, give you satisfaction. Sometimes he does for some, sometimes he doesn't for others, but at least he will talk with you about these situations, which is more than a lot of people. The ACLU, of which he is the vice chair, won't even let you talk to them except for a very brief period during the beginning of their meeting, and then they close it down, something that Plaich tried to change after he originally tried to go along, went along with that policy of exclusion, and it's still the case. again, we need our own civil rights groups in town. And it's a possibility that folks from Palo Alto, who are really more vigorous and high profile, at least more vocal in fighting laws that criminalize the homeless, the most recently the vehicle habitation law there that made it illegal to live in your vehicle at all, where living means sleeping, eating, or resting, among other things, they may be willing to help us with some of our legal difficulties as well, although they also have their hands full there, so we'll see how that goes. And if you want more information about all this kind of stuff, you can get onto the Huff email. Huff is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. You can find more information about this at huffsantacruz.org, www.huffsantacruz.org. And there's fairly recent updates, which I tend to forward to people and then post on the, well, they're posted by the faithful Swami and Vision Song Valerie on the Internet for folks to read and comment on. If you've got comments, you can make them on the Huff blog. And that's that can be helpful because Santa Cruz Indie Media has been burying my stories recently, making them hard to access. And I've talked about this on the air, too. The Santa Cruz local Indie Media worker, who's a very good photographer and activist, formerly a member of the Santa Cruz 11, the group harassed by police for peaceful protest or reporting at the 75 River Street action, has apparently decided he finds me a too vocal critic of groups like the local NAACP, the local ACLU, local peace groups, because I raise issues that concern him, because he thinks that they discredit those groups. So, for example, when I say the NAACP locally needs to concern itself with local racial profiling and not just come out for a rah-rah on the Trayvon Martin issue, that upsets him. When I come out and talk about the ACLU's refusing to talk about homeless issues, even though Steve Plaich is vice chair and has repeatedly been presented with pleas from homeless people and activists to ask local ACLU to make a statement on the sleeping ban or the sweeps or anything else, that issue gets buried on Santa Cruz Indie Media. You can still find them on Santa Cruz Indie Media, but you've got to look for them. Normally, Santa Cruz Indie Media is a good website where you can go to find local stories about local issues by some local writers. I've used it as a primary posting point in the past. Apparently, that's not going to be so easy to do, or hasn't been in the last 2 months. Same thing has been true in the Cruzio Works controversy, where the Cruzio Works group has essentially broken its contract, by the account of Dan Madison, with Dan and his son Griffin, because of the paranoid apprehensions or simple prejudice of some other tenant in their building who didn't like their homeless looks. And they're unwilling to reoffer him the 24-hour contract that he paid for and that he was in the middle of using. And they give him no reason other than vague statements about wanting to assure the comfort and sense of safety of their other members and tenants, but not in indicating in any way what the specifics are. And the fact that I raised this issue, the story got buried on Indy Bay and the Santa Cruz Indy Media. And again, it's too bad, because I think Santa Cruz Indy Media is a good service. I like it. But this kind of crap is really unfortunate and hurtful, and I find it really too bad. Alex DeRosi's stories and photographic coverage of other stuff is really great. I mean, he does a fine job, at least an impressive job as far as I've seen. And I like the coverage he's given to Santa Cruz 11, to the union struggles in Carmel and Salinas and other places. But there can become a certain really harsh and nasty vindictiveness if someone is in a position of power and doesn't like you. And even people in indie media can be in positions of power and decide they're going to punish you for opinions that they don't exactly agree with. And it's always a problem on the left, probably on the right too, where people disagree and they spend this time shooting at each other instead of paying attention to the struggle against the real big powers. So you are tuned to the stream of freakradio.org, and if it's September 5th, as I mentioned before, it is live. And so we can be reached in the studio at 831-427-3772. Let's hear some more from the street.
You can just come on down here, you know. If you're listening on the radio right now, you should just come on downtown, you know. Here goes some people. Good thing.
And we've been talking with
Flying Bull Feathers.
Thank you, Flying Bull Feathers.
Yeah.
And we have a man strumming and a stomping. It's Osho the Owl, who we played on the air the other day.
Putting out the message, help us create a safe place for homeless people at his new setup here at the Rittenhouse Center. And he's getting largely ignored, but a little bit of rejection, but people, occasionally people are taking the flyer, sort of a mixture of approaches. Admittedly, I am at least 12 feet away from this table and not as close as I was at the New Leaf area when we were kind of sort of nearby. And one has to admire the enthusiasm that Brent is using to put out information. And Brent reminds me of what I used to do over at two blocks from here 25 years ago, looking for a petition.
And that actually was the petition for homeless rights. We were in front of the old bookshop Santa Cruz, and we were petitioning city council to end the sleeping ban and to actually just to allow people. It was a much milder request to city council, suggesting that we wanted them to warn people before sighting them in their vehicles. We didn't even ask them to stop sighting people. We just had a very kind of temperate, moderate, Thermidorian, limited request. And the city council ignored that, instead said, we give out cards that talk about spaces in our River Street shelter, of which there were four at that time. And there was no Paulie Loft, there was no Rebel Leaf Family Shelter, there was no Paige Smith Community House. I don't even think there was an HBHB, a Homeless Persons Health Project. There might have been. There was only a very small number of beds in a tiny shelter that had been obtained by direct protest through Jane Immler and Linda LeMaster and Shannon Cosamo and others, hunger strikes from the mid-80s. And we were engaging in direct political petitioning. We turned in thousands of signatures to the city council. Again, not as an initiative, a formal initiative, but simply as a sampling of public opinion. And their response was to arrest the activists who came to city council, change the city council rules to cut back on the oral communications time we had, and attempt to ignore us. Then they started attacking the feeding of homeless people. Later that year in 1988, this was a year before the earthquake, and they arrested people for serving free food and took them to trial. One woman was sent to jail for a month, and her case went around the world. And I think eight Indian newspapers in faraway Bombay were outraged at what went on. It was on the front pages of newspapers overseas, and soon thereafter, the city finally collapsed and allowed people to serve free food. And they even established a free food program out at the what is now the Homeless Lack of Services Center. Was then simply a vacant lot and a small River Street shelter property and a piece of property owned by the Citizens Committee for the Homeless called the Back 40. And it was set up by where Calamity Jane Immler was in charge of it, the very woman they were arresting before. for serving free food downtown at the town clock. Shortly thereafter, Karen Gillette took it over, and it became a free meal, and then the homeless community resource center, which evolved into the current homeless lack of services center, as I call it, or lack of shelter center. Let's hear more from September 1st.
The same kind of focusing on the message, putting it out, trying to involve as many people as possible. And he's doing good in that regard. Except for his hostility toward me and Huff and willingness to denounce us publicly. We have to commend him. And there are also a lot of establishment jewelers out on the sidewalks today, from Super Silver, World Market Bazaar. So I'm passing by a woman with two backpacks on the street and a sign, homeless for the moment, sustained by faith, money helps, and looks like you picked up about $4 or $5 at least, so that's good. This is a soft-spoken woman who doesn't really want to be recorded, so I'm just keeping an eye on the situation, and who knows, perhaps when your partner comes back, he'll have something more to say. So, we're here at the Red Church, and it's about 15 to 6. I'm talking with...
I'm Jacob.
And Jacob, you you have your nice-looking dog with you. You said that things haven't changed much from last year when you made a report?
Last year, the year before, it's about 2010, actually. It just kind of gets a little worse. Last year, I got chased around for 3.5 hours in the middle of the night. I have MS really bad by a police officer in a car. She didn't catch me. I called up Don Lane at 3:30 in the morning, woke his lazy ass up and told him what I thought about it. Said, you know, we should tell these people take a break. Like, hit the crime where the crime belongs. Quit making the homeless people miserable. You know, if they're all getting high, it's because they can't handle the situation they're in. And what it is the people that have transplanted here. I grew up here. People that have transplanted in the last 30, 40 years. I'm a few decades old, anyway. They don't want us here. We're not of their quality or their stature, they think. And
we don't have the money.
No, we don't have the money because we didn't blow it out of proportion here like they did by coming in and buying property at extra high prices and driving the market all crazy, so the people that lived here couldn't live here anymore. I lived in a house 4 years ago, that was about $2,900 when it was brand new, and the rent was $2,100 a month. Okay? So that's only from the 60s till now. You know what I mean? And it's wrong. It's wrong. You can't displace all the people that were born here or have family roots here for people that have more money. Because what happens when the bank runs our country? Jefferson told us what would happen. We'll crash. Bankers will ruin us. And they have. They have. I remember being a kid and buying Corvairs for about $25-$50 on the weekends. You know, and they were 10-year-old cars.
So you're outside still?
I'm outside again. I was in the house for almost a year.
What happened there?
I'm uncomfortable in the house. I made a vow to God a long time ago that I was going to see this thing through, and it's like, here I am. I'd like to go do it somewhere else because I keep getting in trouble with the law here. It's getting costly. Eventually it's going to cost me probably all the time I got every day, but, you know, that's how it goes.
What kind of crimes have you been engaged in?
I've got crimes against, the state as far as they're violating my first and most important civil right, the pursuit of life, liberty, and happiness, in that I like to get high because I'm old. I got MS really bad. I was supposed to be dead from cancer in 2008. And what I did when I was a child, for some reason, bypassed all the wrong nerve damage and let me live on. You know, I didn't quit breathing. I didn't quit do all the things the doctor said I would do. They get mad at me because I will control my epilepsy and MS with speed or with heroin, either one, because I can't get the stuff I need. I had a $2 million lifetime policy of health insurance. My company that got me poisoned, decided I wasn't economically viable anymore and threw that out the window. At that point, with Medicare from our lovely government, I ain't got much of anything at all, bro. You know? I live paycheck to paycheck. If I don't get robbed, I'm doing good.
So you're facing criminal charges for what? Heroin or meth?
I've been on Prop 36 for the last 3 years. It's like I don't even mind telling people that. It's like I face new charges every time I come to town. I get 4 or 5 new felonies. You know, right now I'm facing probably a year or two in jail and whatever. But I tell them, if you really want to feed me for 2 years, let me watch color TV and get a shower every day. I said, I'll probably go for that.
You would prefer jail at this moment? Or
Not here. I'm going elsewhere. I'm not going to stay in the jail here. The jail here is stupendous.
Tell me about that.
It's the most horrendous thing. I got arrested on my birthday, August 4th, with somebody else. She dumped her purse out, and she had dope, and she was lighting up a meth pipe, and it's like, that was all her thing. I was at the beach to feed my dog and let him run a little bit.
Name of your dog is?
Buster. Anyways, he's pretty famous around town. Most everybody knows him. And anyway, so I get arrested, and it's like, finally at 1:30 in the morning, I got arrested about 5, 6 o'clock, something like that. About 1:30 in the morning, I was finally going to go towards the cell, and it's like, I told the guy, well, where's my soap and towel? I'm having a shower now. And it's like, he's going, you want a shower here? And I go, yeah, I'm having a shower here. It's like, that was what I prayed for my birthday. It was a hot shower. I got one.
On your birthday or the day after?
The day after, but I got one. They've been few and far between since I haven't been willing to go back and all that. But, you know, they put me in a boat on the floor, overcrowded, and within a half an hour, after falling asleep, I was floating in about 6 inches of sewage. Thank God those boats float. You call them boats for a reason.
What do you mean? Bunks?
They're extra bunks. They look like Tupperware tubs. And you float in them, thank God.
And so there's actually sewage in the...
Somebody had flooded their cell, and there was raw sewage floating around. They cleaned it all up. The inmates cleaned it all up and stuff. But it's like, when I asked for grievance forms, I got none.
This was this last month?
This was the 4th of August, yes.
And now you're out awaiting a hearing or a trial?
I have a hearing about the middle of the month.
Did you have to bail, or do they just OR you out?
They OR me. When they took my car, they told me the wrong tow company 3 times. Nobody, including the highway patrol, knew where my car was. And then finally my attorney found it in the transcripts on the disc. And this was probably about 11 days afterwards, I would say. And by that time, I couldn't afford to get it back, you know?
Your car was your house?
Yeah. Yeah, basically, it was my home.
Familiar.
It was my home. I've gone from a $40,000 Chrysler Pacifica. I owed $1,500 on it. They had towed away, and by means, I didn't get that back. And I worked my way around the others. I've had, you know, some few $100 cars, and here it is, payday again. I'm looking for another one.
What do you see on the homeless scene generally for folks? You describe your own situation.
A lot of dismayed little kids that don't realize how fucked up it is out here. Excuse my French. But they're hurting inside. They don't know why. Man, a lot of them are still should be at home, like in some nice situation. And their parents are out here too. You know, it's like, what are you going to do? It's a sign of our times. The separation of the classes, the 300-year rule, you know, the mother complex that every nation has ever had. Our mother empire will only last for 300 years, no more, and it's going to fall apart. Something else will emerge out of it, but it won't be the same. And
well, the Roman Empire lasted for 800 years, but
well,
still.
Actually, if you dissect it properly, no one of them lasted more than 300. The Roman Empire itself was about 5 different empires, you know, at times, empirical times. Same with the Chinese. There's never been a dynasty that lasted more than 300 years, really. And then that form of government and everything falls apart, and it's totally different for a second. But then you have to adapt to it. Some people say it's going to be the end of the world. Well, it's not the end of the world. It's the end of our nation being the way it is.
Any incidents downtown that you want to comment on, things you've seen?
I stay out of downtown so far. I just found out the Japanese had some problem with a nuclear plant over there. It's how far out of town I stay.
That's pretty far away. We've been talking with...
Pardon?
Your name, if you want to give it.
Oh, I'm Jacob McIntosh.
Thank you, Jacob. This should be on free radio Thursday night, although we're streaming, we're not broadcasting, but it'll be archived. So we're talking with...
Sideshow.
Go ahead, Sideshow.
Right now in San Francisco, they've decided to just start shooting people instead of letting them run away. So
yeah, I got
is there something happened to someone you know? Or?
Well, it's just and there's also a lot of people disappearing in San Francisco, like people just randomly, like at a higher rate than usual. Like, I mean,
coming from San Francisco.
Yes, I just came from San Francisco today. So
how long have you been up there?
I've been up there for about 3 weeks to a month, just about a month.
And you were outside?
Yes.
And were you squatting or were you camping?
I was camping, but yeah, it was crazy. There was people disappearing. So,
did anybody you knew disappear?
Oh yeah, a few people.
Any particular names you want to mention?
No, I don't like mentioning names. So,
no problem. But, and how do you find? How are you finding Santa Cruz?
I just got here.
Welcome.
Thank you.
And we've been talking with
Sideshow.
Sideshow. Lawrence, you have a report about No Camp.
My name's Lawrence McGregor. The camp on Highway 1 and 17 has been destroyed by the police department. All the gear from all the people who have been out there, tents, sleeping bags, personal items have all been thrown in the dumpster.
And so, for example, last night, did you went somewhere else to sleep?
I went somewhere else, and I still got robbed from someone else who stole a phone from me.
I'm sorry to hear it.
Yep.
Anything else in the last few days you want to report on?
No, sir.
Thank you. And we've been talking with
Lawrence McGregor.
Thanks, Lawrence. You got some thoughts?
I'd like to comment on one thing is, I understand camping on somewhere you're not supposed to camp, and I understand that, people have to sleep somewhere, okay, and apparently when they're coming, just...
Go ahead.
Okay, and when they're used to notice, 3-day notice, whatever it is, coming, to move out, or they're going to come in and take your stuff, I've seen that... Well, I was told that, because I wasn't present when my stuff was taken, but I was told that they came in and cleaned up stuff, and they went into a bin, but then the people that were hired to help clean up had my guitar on their back and took it directly to their vehicle and took it home with them. So I don't understand,
How long ago did this happen?
This just happened, 4 or 5 days ago.
And where were you camped, if you want to say?
Above Highway 17.
Were you alone or with other people?
There was about 40 of us.
And this was the famous raid where they came and took everything. And
yes.
Was it the marijuana plant raid?
I already smoked pot.
I know.
I wasn't even near that part of the camp, if you want to call it. But I was away from the front by myself.
And were you away when all this happened?
I was away, yep.
And when you came back, your stuff was gone?
Everything.
Did you get any notice from the police or the rangers or the sheriffs as to where it could be retrieved?
I never got a notice to move.
Right, and was there any notice left at your camp that said, come to such and such a place?
Nothing.
Pick up their shit?
Nothing at all. Not off everything.
Right.
All my clothes, all my tools, everything, nothing was...
What would you estimate the value of your property at?
About $15,000. My guitar alone was... that's outside of my guitar. My guitar probably worth about $8,000 or $9,000 by itself.
$100,000 or $1,000?
No, $8,000 or $9,000. It was a Gibson.
And what's your profession? What do you like doing? What do you generally work at?
The last job I worked at, AMI Metal and Iron in San Jose.
How long ago?
Last year.
And how long have you been outside?
About 4 months.
In Santa Cruz or San Jose mostly?
Santa Cruz.
What's your analysis of the Santa Cruz scene?
Wrong.
What needs to change?
A little more communication. Some kind of some work for people out here that want to work. Some place for people to go that... But they can close their eyes and not have to worry about going to jail or getting a ticket.
Have you gotten tickets yourself recently?
I've never got a ticket.
Because you're good at hiding? Because the police are nice? What?
I'm pretty good at hiding.
Yeah?
Because I don't want to deal with it. But it doesn't mean I don't lose myself. I lose myself all the time.
We've been talking with, if you want to say.
I'm going to keep anonymous.
Fair enough. Thank you, man.
Good, man.
So it's the beginning of the month, and there are very few, maybe a dozen, 2 dozen people here. And of course, there's the Lee and Val singers, as well as the musical mic off to the side. And also simultaneously happening is a Penn University meeting of a lot of folks that I don't recognize about a UCSC issue, and it's not quite clear what it is, but it's happening.
And that's something that regular listeners probably know about. Penn University is a group that meets weekly in the same building separated by a doorway, but open to the public. From the Calvary Episcopal Father Miller meal goes on from 5 to 7, including a religious service. The Penn University, which sort of is a sort of a lounge chat speaker thing, I think it was originally organized by Bruce Bratton and Paul Lee. It goes on in the next room. You can go to either or both of these if you come to the Red Church on Monday. That's the Calvary Episcopal Church at Lincoln and Cedar Streets. And again, starts around 5. The penny goes to you 6. And the Red Church meal goes to 7, more or less. The meal is very modest. I mean, it involves mostly bagels and spread, salad, coffee, a dessert. And I think they're trying to restore more of a hot meal, too. May be happening now. It hasn't quite restored itself to the way it was several months ago. And again, that's every Monday, and that's in downtown Santa Cruz.
Talking with Dreamcatcher, just bought a bike.
Yeah, I feel good about that. With my own money that I worked hard for last night selling my paintings on Pacific. And everybody sold everything they had on Pacific last night after the wharf closed down. I told everybody, just hang, because everybody wanted to go pack it up before 10. I go, no, it's between 10 and 12 and 1 that most of the money is going to be riding around getting drunk and just looking for somebody cool to hand it to.
And what was happening on the wharf that was, I guess, just the Labor Day stuff?
Right, right. I think that's it, the closing of the summer and the beginning of the local summer. That's what I call it, because I love this weather. I love this place.
And you're smiling more than you want to in these interviews.
That's true. I'm drying out, as you might say, since my birthday.
Which was?
July 22nd. I turned 54. And my dad only lived to 53, so there was kind of a psychological stupidness somehow. But
you've outgrown your dad anyway.
Right. Well, I came up here and nobody knows my dad, so my story really didn't shed a tear. So it really wasn't useful for anything that I really needed because I didn't want sympathy. I just wanted to know what it was going to be like to be older than my father, because I'll never forget that. That was the worst day of my life.
Your father died?
Yes, yes. And I was glad I was in jail when my mother died, because that would have given me the best excuse in the world to do anything stupid.
You are close to both of your parents?
Yes, my mother dearly, and my dad and I. Oh, God. He was so proud of me. He was.
Well, you live on, so.
Yeah.
Right on.
And I'm the last of the Mohicans, it seems. I'm okay with that. I think if any of the scripture is true, if any of the prophecies are true, if anything that any religion or any sect has said anything about the future to come that might be worthwhile to wake up the next day for, well, I have a little hope in that. Not that I know exactly what it is, but I have a question about it, and I have a hope that there is, that it will come before I think I got to go, type thing, you know? I'm not sure what it is, but I am. It is a topic of conversation in most of my moments of equal airtime, I call it.
You're here. And we've been talking with?
Michael Mason Orr.
Thank you, Michael.
Oh, I don't know. It'll be, I guess, I'm hoping that winter will bring some calmness in Santa Cruz. You know, maybe the sweeps will slow down a little bit just so that us that are left can kind of relax for a little bit.
I mean, been swept and have your stuff been taken?
No.
But you are outside.
I'm outside, yeah. But I do a lot of volunteer work. I mean,
your stuff in a safe place, or how do you keep your stuff safe?
I just stay with it. You know,
you must have a somewhat. And you're pointing to your bike cart?
Yep, my bike cart. I worked a couple weeks roofing a house and bought that bike brand new from the bike store. Got a receipt for it. That feels real good, you know?
There was a conservative council member who's been associated with the hate group Take Back Santa Cruz has been registering bikes. Have you thought you wanted to register your bike or not?
Well, yeah, I'll register my bike. My bike is registered with Bicycle Trip. I mean, they have record of it, you know, my name and everything.
but
not with the police.
Not with police, but I should register.
I'm not saying you should either. I'm just wondering, but you know, they claim there's a big push to register bikes. I'm not aware of that, and I just wanted to find out what ordinary bike people are saying.
Well, you know, I don't have a problem with it. I just haven't done it yet. You know, and I'm with my bike all the time.
You're not supposed to do it either. It's not a requirement.
No, it's not a requirement. No.
And we've been talking with
Michael.
Thank you, Michael. Another Michael, actually. Michael, too. Thank you, Michael.
You're welcome.
It could be because the Labor Day picnics are going on. Hey, how's it going?
So, also, well, you've been listening to interviews from September 2nd, I guess it is. Today is the 5th, so it was the 4th, the 3rd. Yeah, Monday the 2nd at the Red Church. Tomorrow, on Friday, there's going to be a, at least it's announced on Santa Cruz, I don't know if it's on Indy Media, Maureen Smith has announced an anti-war, anti-drone, anti-bombing vigil Friday, September the 6th at 5 p.m. at Cooper and Pacific Streets. That's across from the Cinema 9 Theater downtown, right next to O'Neill's. That's where the Women in Black, I think, sometimes appear on Friday. And this will also be an opportunity to oppose the war in Syria, which actually puts you in the same group as the majority of Americans polled in these often not terribly reliable polls, or at least not terribly meaningful polls that are done nationwide. But in this case, since I agree with the result, I like it. That's 5 p.m. tomorrow, downtown Santa Cruz, if you want to raise an anti-war banner. Huff, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, talked about this issue at its meeting yesterday, and we, I don't think we had any particular resolution, but in the past, Huff has actually gone out on the streets to vigil against, and the war, called the vigil against two wars, the war on the poor and the foreign wars abroad. In 2003, it was Bush's wars, and 10 years later, in 2013, it's Obama's wars, but it's the same empire's wars. It's not really any real changes there. And while I'm at it, let me see if I give you an update for those of you who are interested on what we did at this Huff Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom meeting, which happens every week. It'll be happening next week at 11 o'clock at the Sub Rosa Cafe. We've still kind of been feeling around for the new time. We had the meeting at 10, then we decided to meet at 2 for a couple of months, and then we're back at, came back yesterday and met at 10. Now we're going to go to 11, so it'll be at 11 o'clock next Wednesday at the Sub Rosa. So, let's see, what have I got here for you? What happened yesterday? There has been this regular thing that calls itself the Task Force, Citizens Task Force on Public Safety. I call it, of course, the Task Force on Public Hysteria, which has to do with essentially creating a nice jacket, a crime jacket for homeless people, essentially to characterize them as drug addicts, bums, alcoholics, petty criminals, and people who are dragging the town down, which has been the mantra of a certain class of people in Santa Cruz, those who are apprehensive about their high-priced property, those who are nervous about businesses and a failing business climate, those who simply maybe they're afraid of becoming homeless themselves, and others who are simply bigoted, and then some who are apprehensive about the times and choose to blame homeless and poor people for their problems. And some of the problems are, you know, indeed, petty theft that happens because when people are poor and outside, and respect for law, when it becomes oppressive, breaks down, you get more petty crime, although I don't even know, that other than bike theft, that there is more petty crime in Santa Cruz. Anyway, the task force, which has been meeting every Wednesday at the police station, suddenly changed around and met on Tuesday, so we missed it, because Huff usually talks about the upcoming task force meeting, and we often get people who go to it and report back on it. What they do is they have notable worthies who go and speak to this 15-person group appointed by Mayor Bryant, essentially police officers and right-wing vigilante citizens and Seaside Company hacks. Well, The guy's heading the group is a Seaside Company hack. The vice chair is an ex-police officer, Jim Howe. Anyway, and they get input on how they're letting all those petty criminals go, and that's ruining our community, and, you know. And they get some information, too, from social service people who are trying to defend their social services, sometimes out of the best motives, sometimes out of the, you know, don't fire me motives, for sure. And they, I guess yesterday or day before yesterday at the Tuesday meeting, we learned they'd shifted the meeting time. I learned about it too late, and we didn't get to their meeting. So I wanted, as I have been asking in the past, the city council, city staff at city council, to put the recordings of their meetings on in a public place and also online. And with some pressing, I've got them to do that for the prior five or six meetings that they had. You can find those online if you go to City Council Committees, and you'll find the task force. Click on that, and you'll find both their agendas, their staff reports, their minutes, and their audio, which is something I really haven't bothered to do much of other than look at the staff reports and the agendas. But it, some of it might bear some close scrutiny, because you have Judge Simons reportedly making rather nasty statements about homeless people and crime that show that she's in the wrong place. She should probably be, starting a new apartheid South African government somewhere. She has this mentality of these sleep criminals come to town to sleep and do crime. You know, I mean, it's a strange kind of fantasy about a rather nasty, toxic fantasy about homeless people, which is being spread by groups like Take Back Santa Cruz. And you can hear her speak about this issue on the audio when it gets posted. It wasn't posted earlier today, and I contacted the city clerk, Bren Lair. She told me, oh, I'm too busy preparing for the September city council meeting, which comes up next week at Tuesday, which I'll give you some indication of what's going on there in my Sunday show, presuming I get back here for my Sunday show. Don't sleep through it. But, you know, it's important to have public records available, even when you're looking at a toxic public group that doesn't have much public input. This task force does not allow public comment sections, except I think it's allowed one meeting where they had public comment out of six or seven, and it was a long, I understand, section of public comment, but it was only one. They pretty much have their agenda in my mind prefabricated, and you can see that by the way they've divided up the issues, and you can find that by going online and looking at the staff reports. We didn't get a report from the task force meeting because none of us knew it was happening on Tuesday, because every other meeting had been on Wednesday at 6 o'clock in the community room of the police station. Sean Deluge, who has a show on Free Radio at 1 o'clock on Sunday, and who is also known as Dan Madison, the man Cruzio works kitty-clawed out of their office, meaning refused him 24-hour service at Cruzio Works after he'd paid for it, because his homeless appearance and that of his son apparently alarmed a tenant, and they're apparently more responsive to bigoted fears of their neighbors than they are to their obligations to their clients, and I think to the deeper conscience of the community to play fair. He wrote a letter back to the Cruzio Works because he hasn't heard from them. They've been unresponsive to the emails that people have sent in saying, what are you doing? Why are you denying service to this guy? Why are you discriminating against a homeless man and his son? And that struggle continues. And I'm looking over these notes. And we're going to hear some more shortly before the end of the show on sweeps that are destroying the property of homeless women and men out on the outskirts of town. Colin Campbell Clyde, who chaired the last Huff meeting, mentioned that he noted with surprise and alarm, and maybe even amusement at the same time, the rapid appearance of police officers when he was balancing on a railing and the octagon area at the Lulu Carpenter's at the square area that's right off of Cooper Street near Front. So right in front of the Natural History Museum. And he said police immediately arrived and they demanded that he stop balancing on the railing because it was a liability issue. And he said he's noted the upsurge of police patrols downtown. We talked about doing a Huff walkabout, which we may well do after the next Huff meeting if you want to come around. Becky Johnson reported on her conversation with Supervisor John Leopold, whom she confronted regarding the $71,000 amount of money being given for a security gate. I don't know whether it's a fence or whatever that will wall off the homeless lack of services center from the surrounding area, whether it will keep people out or keep people in or facilitate a kind of prison-like scene where they're checking everybody's ID. In any case, it's a huge amount of money going for the kind of purpose that puts people in a position that, of course, makes them less interested in using those services. I think most people don't want to be treated like prisoners. Leopold acknowledged he didn't have anything to say about this except that Monica Martinez, the executive director, had supported this. And of course, that tends to lower her even further in my estimation. I've mentioned her duplicity, her evasiveness, her outright mendacity, that's fancy French for lying, about the Homeless Lack of Services Center refusal to acknowledge that it has no beds, generally. It's out of beds, that it has no space, long waiting lists, and that they don't give out any acknowledgement that you're on the waiting list, even if you ask for it, except if you have a whole bunch of Huff members with you with a video camera, then they will, you know. Isn't that nice? And on other occasions they have, but generally not with any consistency. Monica Martinez has testified in court against homeless activists and has been helped to facilitate their going to a two-year jail sentence for Gary Johnson, for instance, is facilitated by homeless bureaucrats who did not clarify for the court that there essentially is generally no space in the Homeless Lack of Services Center except emergency space for people coming out of the hospitals. And that's only like one or two beds in the River Street shelter. So the idea that there could be space generally on any night is just simply a lie that is being promulgated by the district attorney's office, by the sheriff's department, by the Santa Cruz Police Department, and by the activists who supposedly support homeless people, not activists, bureaucrats, at the Homeless Lack of Services Center. Sad thing. Anyway, Martinez, speaking in favor of the security gate, apparently persuaded Leopold that it was a good idea, or he defended himself by citing her. Cabrillo College is back in session. That means more activism may be focused on the students there. There was an Occupy Santa Cruz meeting last Saturday. There usually is every 5:30 in front of the post office. Becky Johnson reported that there was a support for opposing the military action in Syria by the United States government. We're working at Huff on a survival guide for homeless people. Sean Deluge is working on that one particularly strongly. We are going to be looking into the issue of discrimination against people with backpacks in downtown Santa Cruz. So if you're facing that kind of discrimination, please get in touch with Huff at 423-4833, 423-HUFF, H-U-F-F, and let us know. And we talked about more, but I'm going to have to defer that until next Sunday, and when I come back at 9:30, presumably. I'm going to play a little more from the Red Church, and then I will be on my way, and you'll be in the middle of From the Cream to the Dregs. I think it's going to be another canned show, or maybe a show done by an alternate, because I think Uncle Dennis, who normally does the show, is out of town.
Hey, here you are again.
Yeah, oh yeah, it's difficult,
and it
could be because it's the first of the month or the second of the month, actually. But there aren't a lot of people here. But we do have Scott Galloway, who's meandering about. Scott, what's happening? Anything in the last week you want to report for Free Radio?
Not here, no. Everything's nice and peaceful, and people are having a good meal tonight. I guess we got ratatouille, whatever that is. I guess it's vegetable stew. It's supposed to be good, and macaroni, and we got
the first hot
really. Oh, well, it's the first hot day. We got a hot meal. We had a hot meal last week, too.
Spaghetti, was it, I think?
I think so, yeah. It's been a while.
There wasn't any meat or anything in there?
I don't know. No meat there?
I don't remember that there was, but I didn't.
Fish for the bagels. That was our meat, I guess, you know. Tuna fish for the bagels, you know.
It's a little fishy to me.
Tuna fish is not bad. I mean, I do that once in a while myself.
So your correspondence with the Crucio Works attempting to, you know, restore your justice for the homeless guy, Dan Madison, is being put up on online along with that of a few other people to demonstrate that some people are asking questions and getting rather unproductive answers, as far as I can see.
Well, I think the difference between a public agency and a private company is a private company doesn't have to really exercise the full disclosure of a public agency. So I'm more used to a public agency environment, you know. So
they don't have to, but it says something when they don't.
My point of advocacy was that sitting down and talking with people is better than taking strident positions, you know. So,
sure.
So that was my point of advocacy, and the letter I got basically advised me that Cruzeiro Works wasn't really in a position to discuss it. So that
didn't want to.
That ended the dialogue as far as I was concerned with me, but hopefully Dan will be able to have further dialogue with him and resolve the issue.
They haven't responded to him either. Well, but, you know, I think if the community continues to raise issues, at some point they may feel obliged to actually respond in a more positive way, or maybe not.
Well,
speaking of the devil, here comes that man about Crucio Works.
Yes, there he comes right now.
And here he goes.
Here he goes. He didn't want to talk to you, apparently.
Well, no, we've already talked about it. No new information, really. A likely story. Fair enough. So anything else? I noticed there's a smaller crowd here today. I guess the beginning of the month. Labor Day,
I think.
Food so, elsewhere.
Yeah, Labor Day. I don't know. Food elsewhere, maybe. Maybe barbecues. I'm not sure what. There also seems to be a lot of people here tonight that I don't recognize. So I think we've got a different crowd in town, maybe. I don't know. Maybe this is a Labor Day crowd. I know Highway 17 was crowded today, so maybe we have a resurgence in homeless folks visiting the beach.
Your enabling activity is drawing the homeless like a magnet to this area.
We're talking about enabling tonight, and I think the word is overused. I think it probably comes out of the recovery movement. I think the essential model I like is Mother Teresa. You know, she was taking care of dying beggars without any expectation that they were going to be transformed or that she was not enabling them. They were going to cease to. She was not enabling them. She was basically just doing it because she believed they were. She saw Christ in them. She believed they were fellow human beings, and she was basically doing what she would want to have done. So I think she's following the teachings of Jesus. That's all we're doing here, and I think that's not enabling. Enabling to me.
Yeah, but is Jesus good for business? Have you considered that? And what about the menace of the needles? Come on, man.
Well, I don't know about menace of the needles. I don't know anything about that. But is Jesus good for business is a real issue. You know, some people have been, some prominent people who advocated giving it all away have been asked to sort of leave. You know, John Wesley was one of them. He was the founder of the Methodist faith, although he was a lifelong Episcopalian, was asked not to preach in Anglican churches because his message after being a missionary was to, we shouldn't have poor people.
Give all thou hast to the poor.
Yeah, give all that hast to the poor.
Is that a form of communism? What are you, some kind of red?
Well, you know, communism is another topic totally. You need to talk to an expert on Marxism before you can really get into that. I'm not.
Groucho or?
Groucho, Chico, Harpo, any of those guys could tell you all about
Zeppo. No, don't forget about him.
No, you know, we always forget about Zeppo. You always ask for the fourth Marx brother. Nobody can ever remember who.
Zeppo is the fifth Marx brother.
Who's the fourth? Groucho, Chico, Harpo.
There's five of them, but I don't remember the fourth. Maybe Zeppo is the fourth, but there is a fifth. Gummo.
Bernard Marx. He was in Brave New World.
Carl. I think Carl is another one of those Marxy guys, but he was a little earlier, a bigger.
Was Zeppo. Zeppo and.